The holy name of Lord Krishna is more merciful than Krishna himself. It said, when you are making offenses to the form of Krishna, then the holy name can purify you. But if you make offenses to the holy name, then that's the last resort. So the holy name is the last resort. That is why it's not surprising that in the age of Kali, it is the Yuga Dharma. At the same time, though, that holy name is more wonderful than any other process in any other age. Because in previous ages, no process is so powerful, is so directly purifying the living being. Immediately one is on the pure spiritual platform. Although we don't realize it, just like sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and you're sort of half sleeping, you're not completely awake, you're kind of half there. So like this, we are chanting only half there, we're not fully appreciating the chanting. When Srila Prabhupada was chanting in Tompkins Square Park, he was sitting a little off to one side. So some of the visitors to the park came to see what all the commotion was all about. And they saw and heard, first of all they heard, of course, the kirtan, then they saw all these people that had gathered there and chanting the holy name. Usually, the park was a place where musicians would hang out, but everyone was in his own corner. One was playing a conga somewhere, some others were sitting under trees playing flutes or whatever they were doing. But somehow or other, the kirtan was the thing that brought them all together. It was basic, it was simple, it was possible to follow, and every musician sort of came in, and whether they could play or not, they played along, as we can see on the video. If you look at the video of the kirtan in Tompkins Square Park, there was someone blowing a flute, my God, like a six-year-old would do better. Really, it was something else. And yes, so that kirtan was going on, and Prabhupada was sitting to one side, and only after a while, someone said, only after a while I realized that he was the center of the whole thing. That he was doing it. That old man was just making it all happen. And in this way, it was like that. Because he sang with great faith. He sang with full faith that if we simply chant the holy name, then everything will transform. And therefore Prabhupada sang that Hare Krishna Dhan, the Maha Mantra in that tune. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It doesn't weaken. It doesn't lose momentum, it doesn't lose strength. Each mantra, again, clear and full strength, and it just carries on and on. And Prabhupada is chanting that mantra, and somehow or other with full faith that as long as the chanting was there, that everything would become transformed. And that the original identity of whoever was present would be awakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhu Kabunai Shavanadi Sudha Chitta Karya Udai. Again, the original love of God that is in the heart of every living being will be awakened. We will realize that actually this is a corner of the spiritual world which has been covered by a cloud of illusion, but actually still is the spiritual world. And those who realize it realize that they are in the spiritual world. There's no question of going to the spiritual world, already there. And that is the liberated platform. That is Prabhupada. If we would glorify Prabhupada as the one who went back to Godhead, I personally wouldn't feel that that was much glorification. I would think that would diminish his position if you would say that. Because I feel he was always there. Where's the question of going back to Godhead? Did he ever leave Godhead? There's no. He was all along, he was there, every moment. And you hear, there's that lecture where Prabhupada said, "Mother, today Krishna killed this demon." And he speaks like he was there. It just sounds like he was present when Krishna killed the demon. Of course, I'm not one to speculate about Prabhupada's eternal identity. Whatever that may be is beyond my capacity to perceive. But all I know is that Prabhupada was fully there, a resident of the spiritual world. And it is that what made him also the center. Just like that made him the true representative of Krishna. It said wherever Krishna was, Krishna was the center of the attention. There is that B.N. Sharma, who makes really nice paintings, Jaipurian style of Krishna, and he paints Krishna and the cows, and you see all these eyes, and all the eyes are looking at Krishna, and the cowherd boys are looking at Krishna, and the birds are looking at Krishna, the gopis are looking at Krishna, everybody is looking at Krishna. And that is the nature of the spiritual world, that everyone is looking at Krishna. And when Prabhupada was present, everyone was looking at Prabhupada. Wherever Prabhupada was, it was the center of the universe, right? Or the center of the world, at least, right? And wherever he was the most important place in the world. At one point, Prabhupada said that anybody who buys tickets for myself, my secretary, and you know, whatever other entourage was there, and puts $1,000 in my book fund, there I will go. So Hridayananda Maharaj took up the challenge and invited Prabhupada to Gainesville. Now, at the time, Gainesville was not really so developed yet. It had been started actually by these four sannyasis who at one point were asked to preach independently. And they started preaching in Gainesville. Anyway, Prabhupada went there, and now the Gainesville preaching has taken off in so many ways. Now there has been prasadam distribution for 40 years on campus or more. And the result is 1 year I was in Gainesville and they were just opening a restaurant and it was difficult to get the permission for yet another restaurant. And they went to the mayor directly to try and get him to intervene. So to start a whole presentation, actually we are the International Society for Krishna Conscious all over the world, Indian tradition, and the mayor is sort of like not really paying attention, and they just waffle on. And then the mayor said, "Do you have some of that food?" And then they said, "Yes." And then quickly they arranged for a big plate of prasadam, mayor size. And, you know, and then after the mayor had taken the prasadam, he said, "What was that thing again? You needed signed?" You know, and he's just ready to sign it. And it turned out that he was a student in the university in Gainesville before. He'd studied there. And he had regular prasadam on campus. right? So, you know, yeah, so like that. So, and Prabhupada blessed that area so much just by going there. Now there is Alachua, which is the biggest project in ISKCON as a whole. So wherever Prabhupada went in the world, he created Tirthas. He transformed these places into holy places. That is the nature of the pure devotee. Wherever the pure devotee goes, those places become surcharged with transcendental potency and knowledge. And one who goes there just becomes purified somehow or other, knowingly or unknowingly. That is the nature of the presence of a great personality. So, like that, we are recipients of the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Great acharyas have come one after the other. Each one has carved the way. Each one, Srila Rupa and Sanatan. When Srila Rupa and Sanatan were in Vrindavan, everyone was talking about them. In Bengal, the devotees were all inquiring, how are Rupa and Sanatan? What are they doing? What are they talking about? They were literally speaking the talk of town. It says, dira dira priya janakaru, priya karu. They were very dear to both the gentle and the ruffians, the gundas, as they are called. So that's the nature of such great devotees. And they were representing the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then it comes down, one great personality after another. And each one brought us so much. And then Prabhupada came and just created all these devotees. Yeah? He created them. They were not like, most were not really like that way inclined. But somehow or other, Prabhupada just created them by... some he even kidnapped, like Banu Maharaj. You know, he was Japanese and he didn't really want to become a devotee, but Prabhupada just took him and said, "You're traveling with me," and took him and initiated him and, like, you know, just kidnapped him. He wanted him. So, then there was Hans Kelman from the Netherlands, right? And he was an architect somehow or other, and he came to visit the Bombay project, which then was just a block of land and so on, with a temporary construction on it. And somehow or other they brought him. Tamal Krishna Maharaj saw him, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a real good preacher. He had an instinct for you know, like, devotee making. Yeah. He would just watch and see a crowd and see, that's the one, right? And then he'd just go for the person, right? And he'd always know which one it was, you know? So I've seen him do it in New York. A really expert in making devotees. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he saw it straight away, and he started talking to this young man and said, "Oh, an architect." And he brought him to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, this is an architect." Prabhupada said, "Architect?" His eyes became round. He said, "Bring pen and paper." And then Prabhupada said, "So, we want to make a temple in Vrindavan. You know, can you make a sketch for it, a design for it?" And so it's like, you know, Hans started sketching, and Prabhupada said, "Oh, very nice." Right. And so they're chatting for a little while, and then Prabhupada said, "Tomorrow we are having initiations, and I would like to invite you. I'd like to invite you." So Hans said, "Oh, that sounds very interesting. I would like to come and see it. Who will be initiated?" And Prabhupada said, "You." kidnapping. It's just, it was kidnapping. There's nothing else. What else can you say? Huh? So somehow or other, Prabhupada, by force, by hook or by crook, somehow or other, he made us devotees, right? He made, otherwise, you know, nah, you know, that's really like, no time for that, you know, it's like, come on, you know. A little spirituality is nice, but not too much, huh? You know, don't overdo it. But Prabhupada just pointed out, you can't overdo it. Don't worry, you can't. There's no question of overdoing it, right? The more you do, the better. Right? There's no limit to what we can offer to Krishna. There's no limit to glorifying Krishna. There's no limit to serving Krishna. And he showed it himself. His spiritual master had told him to preach in the English language. Now, it was known that that meant go to the West and preach. So he could have, you know, made a nice tour, right, of Europe or America and preach, you know, give some nice lectures and return gloriously back home. But Prabhupada's idea was different, right? Preach in the English language basically meant try and make all these people that live there in the Western world devotees. That's how he took it. And then he just didn't just preach in the English language, in so many languages. And that was amazing. So I grew up outside of Amsterdam in a nice town, a director's town. And it was kind of very peaceful and so on. But when the Beatles came to the Netherlands in 1964, I think it was, then everything changed, everything. And suddenly, all these young people from all over the world, they came to Holland, because it was a free haven, and the government was very open, and there was a park called the Vondelpark, and they allowed anyone to just camp there. Now not anymore, but there were like, I think, 10,000 of hippies in that park. 10,000, 20,000, I don't know, it was full, it was black with people. So there were so many young people from all over the world that even I went to camp there, although I lived nearby, you know, only half an hour away. Really, it wasn't far, but, you know, I just didn't want to miss out, you know, it was something so big. I think if I miss this, you know, like so many young people all gathering there, if I miss this, then, you know, and sleep at home in my bed, forget it, you know. So I also slept in the park. And anyway, Prabhupada came to that park. I don't remember that. I may not have been there on that day. But anyway, Prabhupada came to that park. Prabhupada gave a short lecture. There was a kirtan, and then Prabhupada just said, these people, only kirtan and prasadam. That's all we can do with them. Yeah. But somehow or other, many people became devotees then in Amsterdam. We had a temple in Amsterdam it was a place where so many young people came, and when you're far away from home, it's much easier to get involved in something outlandish, you know, like Krishna consciousness. You don't have to immediately explain it to your parents, which helps, you know. So it was kind of very easy. So the temple just filled up, and it was packed with devotees, packed. I remember that I stayed there in 78, and then it had been going for 3 years when I came, and it was so full that on the weekend especially, it was extra full. And the last person going to bed had to sleep in the bathroom, and he would be the second person up, usually, because the first person going to the bathroom would wake him up. But like that, it's like people were sleeping on the landing of the stairs, people were sleeping everywhere. It was just packed and packed and packed. And it wasn't just in Amsterdam like that. Many temples were like that, very full of devotees, packed, completely full. Just to know where to put them all. And even private property was sort of like, well, it wasn't taken in the same way. Your dhotis would go in the bathroom, in the washing machine, and you wouldn't always get the same dhoti back that you had before. And one day I saw my sleeping bag go out of the, someone walked away with my sleeping bag, and it goes, that's my sleeping bag. Prabhu, don't be so attached. I was attached. It was a good sleeping bag. I found it 3 years later in Kathmandu. And I took it back, it had my name marked in it, my initials, so there was no mistaking about it. Yeah. I was too attached. Just see. Anyhow, but it was very, very nice. Early in the morning, they would play tapes of Prabhupada singing, and immediately everything was very transcendental. From 3 o'clock onwards, everyone started to get up. Devotees all were offering obeisances to each other in the morning. And when they would see each other, they would immediately offer obeisances. And I was new, and there was this senior devotee who was competing with me. And he beat me every time. He was always on the ground before me. I tried to beat him, but I couldn't. And then I had first been in Vrindavan in the temple, and I got jaundice there. So I came back and my liver was not well, and then as a result I couldn't eat halva or upma, which was the only thing they ever had. There was nothing else to eat. So anyway, this devotee made some banana bread for me, which was not bad. And then he would put it in my cupboard and in a locker, and with a note saying, "Your dog servant." And I thought, how can any human being call himself your dog servant? I thought, this is just too much, too much. It was shocking. Right? And then I was too lazy to get a knife, so I just broke pieces off the bread, and ate it like that. And then the next day I got a note, "You eat just like a mouse, your dog servant." Oh, the Hare Krishna movement is a very nice movement. It is a movement where, all these devotees were so together, right? We were so together. In that temple, at least, we were so together because there was no space. You slept almost on top of each other. That's how together we were. Or we were sent out in Sankirtan vans in the winter at minus 15, and there was no heating in the van, and the only heating was from the body of your neighbor. So we were all piling up together somehow or other to survive. And then cold showers outside of the van, and then the whole day in the street it was freezing. So some got sick and we complained. So they said, "Okay, you can get one room in a motel. All right, you just go to a motel, not a hotel, a motel, because they're spread out, and it's like at the end. You take the last room at the end, and then you know, one checks in and then all the others move in, like at late night. So we did it, right? And we were like, just again, it was packed, it was full, the whole motel room. We took all the furniture, put it against the wall, the beds vertical and everything, and we had a big, we all slept on the floor and that was okay. The next morning, we put a big wooden board in the middle of the room and put a gas stove on there for the kitchery, you know. And we put a big pot of kitchery on there, start cooking and so on. And every devotee was standing to chant and take. There was no sitting because we would all fall asleep, we're too tired. And taking like one step forward and one step backward. And we're all fully dressed in dhotis, tilak, everything. Because, you know, that was the standard. And we're chanting. And then, I guess the fumes of the kitri, or maybe the buzz of the chanting, but something attracted the lady, the wife of the owner of the motel. And she came, and she knocked on the door, and she opened the door, and she screamed at the top of her lungs. So that didn't last. That was one night. Then we were back in the van, you know. I still remember the name of that motel. It was at Wittepaard, the White Horse, you know. I remember that. But you know, like what can I say? It was. There was such a spirit to go out and preach, and the devotees were so together, there was such a deep bond in doing it all together, that they were like deep, deep relationships actually formed, which lasted for life, right? When you meet those devotees, it's always something special. So, yeah. Somehow or other, I never met Madhavi Prabhu in those days because I never came to South Africa. And I guess he went there. I don't know when he came here, but he will remember, maybe. Something he'll remember, I'm sure. Who can adjust this microphone?
Well, I joined in America, and I joined the traveling party, actually. It was the book distribution party for Rupanuga Prabhu. It was the GBC for the entire eastern United States, Canada, and the Latin America, a huge area. And I met them in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was raised. And then I joined them in Knoxville, Tennessee. They would rent a house. A devotee named Shubhananda was Rupanuga's secretary, and he would go to the university and find some department, psychology, if there was Indology or psychology or anthropology, and arranged for Rupanuga Prabhu to speak. And the devotees used to do book distribution. So I'd gone to university, I'd stopped, and then I was working, and I decided to go back to universities in the evenings and on weekends. So Rupanuga spoke in our sociology class, and he came in. He had a box of Rajavijas, the king of knowledge, and he gave out all the books, and he said, "Turn to page 8. And then he was conducting it just like a class. And he spoke, and there were some people listening politely. And after the class, they were giving out some prasadam. It was simply wonderful. So I don't remember much about the class, but I really remember that simply wonderful. And so some people came up to speak to Rupa Nuga after the class, and I came up too, but I was looking at those simply wonderfuls. But Subhananda was holding him with both hands around the bowl. And I figured, no, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to get into those simply wonderful. But I met the devotees later. They had at their home, the house they were renting. And I visited them in Nashville. And then eventually I joined them in Knoxville. So I had been working in construction, and I was doing yoga, I was taking karate, I was taking TM. I was reading and I was thinking. Interestingly enough, one of my best friends from the first time I was in college, he went to St. Louis, and he kind of introduced me to drugs. Like that. So he came back and I procured some marijuana, and I thought that he would like to get high. And then he chastised me. And there was a temple in St. Louis, actually, so I could only surmise that he had met a devotee, because he said, "Why don't you understand how important human life is? And don't you ever try to think, what is the goal of existence?" And, you know, coming from him, it struck me so deeply. And I thought, well, yeah, no, I never thought of it. When I was taking all these things, and I realized that I don't know why I'm here. I don't know the purpose of life. But I believe there is a purpose. There is a purpose to my existence. There's a reason why I'm here. And I don't know what it is now, but when I find out, I'll be ready. I'm going to be ready. So like I said, I took karate. I was working out in the hot sun all day, doing construction. Come back, I would be doing TM, yoga, all these things. And then I met the devotees, and I went to see them. There was a mimeograph sheet of paper that said, "Have a vegetarian feast on the Krishna bus, KRSNA. And I looked at that word for about 15 minutes, figuring, how did they misspell this word? Where's the vowel supposed to be? So then I went to see, and I thought it would be boys and girls in t-shirts and blue jeans, and it wasn't. It was these shaven-headed guys in orange who looked like they'd just come from outer space. And I said, whoa. And I dragged myself over, and I met this one bhakta, actually. And he preached to me so nicely that I agreed with everything he said. Everything he said. He used all the right words. And I got some books and incense after they were leaving for Nashville, actually. And I'd been engaged, and my wife, my fiance, her father was a mortician, and an alcoholic. And he was 65, and he had left his wife and daughter, who was I was engaged to, and gone to live with some younger lady. And he was a professional drinker, practically. And one devotee came back from the party. He was from Memphis originally. And His parents were paying for some dental work, so he stayed with me. And while he was staying with me, my fiance called and said, she was crying, and she said, my father died. And I was thinking, well, good riddance then, good riddance. Like that, because they always talk so horribly about him. And that he had died on the Sunday morning on Lamar Avenue. So in America at that time, you couldn't buy hard liquor on a Sunday. You'd have to find someone who had stashed. They called them bootleggers. And that's where they lived, in Lamar Avenue. So he dropped dead looking for alcohol on a Sunday. So I was going to go over and see her, and this devotee, his name was Shankara, he became Shankara Das. He said, no, you can't go there. You must invite her over here, and we'll read Srimad Bhagavatam together. And she didn't go for that at all. And she called my family, and my brothers called me. I've got 7 brothers. Called me and said, you go to the wake, or we'll come and beat you up. I said, well, you can do what you want, but I'm not going. So this Shankara, he had finished his dental work, and he was leaving the next day for Knoxville. So then I thought, well, I don't think things are going to be good for me by myself here. So I said, I think I'll buy a ticket as well. So then I flew off, and I came back a couple of weeks later, paid all my bills, gave away my possessions, except I had a car. It was called a Javelin. It was like a sports car. And a stereo system, and I brought those with, and some few thousand dollars. But that was the habit then. When you came, you brought what you had, and you gave it to the temple. So the Sankirtan leader, he had decided we'd move from to Knoxville. The devotees had rented a house, but it wasn't a house, it was a duplex. And they didn't know, but on the other side of the duplex was a black person who was a pimp. And he was pimping white women in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is the land of the rednecks. Rednecks. So we didn't know it, but a white pimp and the black pimp had a big argument on the Saturday. We were out on Sankirtan, we didn't know. And on Sunday, we had a fire sacrifice. And 2 devotees got their second initiations. And that evening, someone threw a firebomb into the window. And one of the devotees that was just been initiated, who was sleeping under the window, and the bottle broke on the window jamb, and then all the fire fell all over him. And I got burned on my feet. This Shankara boy was burned on his legs. But this boy was burned over 90% of his body. And it looked like he had a bad sunburn. But a week later, all of his skin was charred black. And Rupanuga took me with him to see him at the hospital. And he was yelling at him in his ear, saying, you won't be able to chant, but you have to chant within your mind. He was saying like that. And he passed away a day or so later. So then I thought, this Krishna consciousness is very serious business. Then we moved from... In fact, the newspapers had put out an article saying that they reported the bombing, and they said that the Hare Krishnas believed in the perfection of sensual love. So it was like they were inviting everybody else to come join. throw a firebomb too. So there were people that were friendly. There was a young couple, they had a farm outside of town. And the first service I did, Rupanuga asked me if I had some money. And he wanted me to buy a riot shotgun, 16 gauge. So we would stay up all night doing guard duty. And then we moved on to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where Buttigieg Prabhu had actually opened a temple years before. Then we moved on to Washington, D.C., and Rupanuga started the political party called In God We Trust. And we traveled all over collecting funds for putting devotees into as candidates for representatives, Congress, and Balavantra Prabhu even ran for mayor of Atlanta. And it was interesting. But ultimately Prabhupada decided that politics was too dirty a business. So he stopped that. And eventually I went to India. Before going, Prabhupada came to Atlanta. He came to Atlanta, and that's there in the following Srila Prabhupada videos. And this devotee, Shankar, he had been a rock and roll drummer in a rock and roll band. And Rupanuga, he had ordered some mridangas. Not big ones, they were kind of like medium. Oh, there was a medium-sized one. And he let Shankar choose. And so Prabhupada, when Prabhupada came to Atlanta, he gave the shortest arrival address in history because he said that he had come from Caracas, Mexico City, Miami, and he had come to Atlanta. And he said, "I see your temple is the best." So the devotees went, "Hari Bhava, Hari Bhava." And he said that wherever he had gone, he had seen Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. They had traveled so far to deliver the fallen souls. And then he was saying, "They are so merciful. They are so merciful." And then he went into ecstasy. He couldn't speak anymore. So it was like a two-minute arrival address. So the next day, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to teach the devotees the song, the Bengali song, I think it's by Lochandas. Parama Karuna, Pahun Dvijana, Nitai Gora Chandra. So he wanted to sing it, but it's not a three beat, it's a two beat. It's two beats. Da, 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 da. But nobody could get it. So he asked for the mridanga. And devotees were kind of surprised because Prabhupada hadn't played mridanga publicly for a few years. So they passed up the temple mridangas. But as temple mridangas would go, they were completely beat out. So he touched it and he's kind of scowled. And then they gave him the other mridanga. And he, you know, also was dead. So this boy Shankara, he had his mridanga. He wouldn't let anybody touch it. So he ran up to his room and he brought it down, and Rupanuga's wife had made a velvet cover for it. So he passed it along and the devotees gave it to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada tested it and then he went. So then he taught the devotees that song. So that was very nice. And then we went, a few weeks later, we went to India, to the Mayapur Festival. So, it was interesting. And then after Mayapur, we went to Vrindavan for the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And I was initiated then. And Rupanuga, he had said Prabhupada wanted devotees to take an exam. And he gave me 5 questions, and those 5 questions are in. And I wrote an essay on each one, and I gave it to him. I'm not exactly sure if Prabhupada saw it, but he said it was very nice. And 4 days after the temple opening, then there was the initiation on Balaram's Ras Purnima. And I went up to get my beads. Actually, I'm on the video. I'm wearing this T-shirt with the Lord Nrisimhadev's head on the back. And I'm offering my obeisances. Srila Prabhupada gave me my beads and says, "Your name is Madhavi Das." And I offered my obeisances, and then he said, "Madhavi means one who has a good brain," meaning Krishna, and I'm his servant. So everybody else a Haribol. So that was very wonderful. That was my only personal association with Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. Well, that was very detailed description. Anyway, I am thinking that in some ways things changed so much, and in another sense things didn't change at all. In the sense that It was a time, like he said, where people would just join the temple, give everything they had, and also really joined. Everyone joined a temple. Joining meant moving in a temple, and then give your whole life, and. There was no congregation, didn't exist. We just had the temple devotees, that was all. And the rest, devotees lived in the temple, and everyone else was a karmi. They were simple. It's like that. There were no devotees living outside, didn't exist. We didn't have any. I can't remember one.
They lived outside, then you tried to get them inside.
Yeah, of course, had to join the temple. So, at one point, so many devotees. I remember in Vrindavan, I had gone back to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan, at one point, I think it was 82 or 81, I can't remember, but the vice president moved out of the temple to live outside. And I was so shocked. Think, how could you possibly do that? It's a grihastha, but you know, how could you move out of the temple to go live in the material world? It just like couldn't understand it. It just thought like this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. He's gone back to the material world. Yeah? You know? It's like going to get a job. I really thought like, how could any devotee in the world ever get a job and work outside? And although Prabhupada did say at the beginning of the movement that the grihastha should be prepared to work outside, for all practical purposes it didn't exist. We're just all living connected to temples, in temples had Grihastha houses, right? There were a few Grihasthas there. It was anyway an ocean of saffron and a few white specks. But then so many began to move out over time, and so many people also started to come, and a congregation started to form of devotees who had lived in the temple and devotees who were outside. And then the result was that at one point, at first, if someone moved out of the temple, we basically thought, well, he's blooped, you know. He blooped back into the ocean of material nescience, right? Bloop. Right? That's what it was. He was finished. But gradually, there were more of them on the outside than us on the inside. And then suddenly it changed. The definition of ISKCON changed, and it became the greater ISKCON became ISKCON. And then the devotees in the temple, they were the fanatics. Yeah. They were like dysfunctional fanatics suddenly. They were the guys who couldn't do anything and therefore were dysfunctional, and they were fanatics as well. I remember how I became a fanatic. And what to say, it was, I guess I went on like that, and sort of now I'm a dinosaur, I guess. I should have been extinct. Staying in a temple. But staying in a temple is actually very important. And there are many nowadays who've never ever stayed in a temple. It's not the same, because just a house, there is a corner for Krishna. But a temple, yeah, the whole thing is for Krishna, basically. It's just so much more intensely centered around Krishna. And then all these devotees like that. So if we say that knowledge comes to parampara, parampara is not only the disciplic succession, which is recorded in the opening pages of the Bhagavad Gita, but also parampara is existing everywhere. There were people who were trained in cooking, there were people who were trained in cleaning, there were people who were trained in every aspect of devotional service, and they were training others. And that's how it was in the temple. I learned in Vrindavan, I learned the way Prabhupada was accounting money, and that he had a system that for every meal we had to record all the ingredients before. That was like for hundreds of devotees, right? Like maybe 300-400 devotees taking prasadam. All the ingredients would be recorded, everything that was used for producing the meal. Then it was counted how many people were eating the meal, and at the end of the meal we could tell you exactly how much it had cost, the whole meal, and then per head, you know? I mean, we might know it immediately. Today it cost us so much to feed the devotees. It was just amazing. So the standards were like really very, very clear. Now it's, in that way it changed sometimes. Now it's not always so clear.
He's got a lot of hair.
After I was initiated, then I'd asked Rupa Nuga if I could stay in India. And Srila Prabhupada actually asked all of his GBCs to leave a man in India, because Vrindavan was open and Mayapur was growing. So he allowed me to stay. And so I, even before the festival was over, I was on the train back to the 30-hour train from Delhi to Calcutta with all the Gurukul, the students, the Gurukul teachers, and the four Shastris that Srila Prabhupada had met and encouraged to come to Mayapur and teach Sanskrit to the Gurukula. And when the festival had been on, actually before we left for India, we were in New York City, and Hari Kesh Prabhu, who wasn't a sannyasi at the time, he gave a lecture before, and he had been Srila Prabhupada's secretary and servant. And he said, he gave the lecture, he was saying that when you go to India, he said, don't think you're going on holiday. He said, when you go to India, try to drown yourself in service. Then you'll appreciate India. If you go there with the idea of kicking back and enjoying the sights, then you'll never be able to appreciate visiting the Holy Dham. So when I got there, there were devotees. It was the Lotus building was the bottom floor. And so after Mangalarti, then they would clean the temple room. And they would get buckets of water, and you'd splash the water out. And then first you would sweep it with these hand brooms. And then they had these squeegees that you used to push the water out. And it would clean the floor and shine it at the same time. The floor was like mirrors, practically. And so when I came back to Mayapur, I was put in charge of cleaning the Lotus building. Of course, that was the only building. So we used to clean the temple room, clean all the floors. And I'd actually asked Rupanuga if I could stay in India, because they said that Srila Prabhupada was very available in India. So I figured that, well, Srila Prabhupada is my spiritual master, and I want to be able to, you know, serve him, associate, listen to him, hear him, inquire from him. So I cleaned the building, and then I was cleaning it under the direction of Madhusevata Prabhu, who was there, and then they moved Madhusevata to construction, and then eventually I was moved to the kitchen. I wasn't the cook, but I was in charge of the godown, per se. All the supplies, I would pay the people who brought the vegetables, who brought the fruits, and I'd have to do the shopping in Navadvip. And on one occasion, it had been raining, and I had to go to do the marketing. And it was mud everywhere. And at Hulur Ghat, this one Gaudiya Math Sannyasi, he was coming on a rickshaw. Usually they stop the rickshaws up away from the ghat, but this rickshaw wala was bringing this Gaudiya Math Sannyasi on the rickshaw right through all the mud and everything. And so he stood up in the rickshaw with his danda and everything, and he said, "Dandavat, Dandavat." And I thought, I'm supposed to bow down to in the mud. So I pulled up my dhoti and got on my knees and offered respects, but I think actually he was offering some kind of praise for being a Western devotee and trying to exist in India. So you'd go to the boat, and it was 20 paisa. But they would tell me, 5 rupees. Five rupees. I said, no. So I'd wait for someone to come, but then they would yell to the guy that everybody's charging this guy 5 rupees. And so I sat there for quite a while, and this other guy came in. And he said, 50 paisa. I said, okay. Okay, so you're going to get cheated in India. Just try to not be cheated too much. So then I had a few thousand rupees that people knew I probably wouldn't have been here now. And I would do all the shopping, the leaf plates and the grains and whatever things that we couldn't grow in Mayapur itself. I would bring them back, and usually it would come back late at night. And we would do food distribution on the weekends. We would do our ISKCON food relief. And the old kitchen, and we would serve three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and in the evenings, the Bengalis wanted dinner. So 9 o'clock at night, you have to open up the kitchen and serve a meal. So that was always interesting. We would serve this kind of food relief. The vats, the woks, were this big and so deep. You couldn't clean them from outside. You had to clean them from inside. They were so big. And we'd cook khichdi, and on ekadasis they would cook sabudana. They would cook like a sago. And we'd line all the people up, give them the mango leaf plates, and put the khichdi there. But we would notice that some people finished it so quickly. And then you know how Indian people can sit kind of like on their haunches. So then we'd pick up the cloth and we'd see they had their tiffin there. And they would put it in there, and Japatakumar said, no, they want to take it home and eat it with their fish. So we'd have to get the tiffin, empty it on the plate again and tell them, no, you eat it, and then we'll give you more, but you can't take it away. So we would do that. And then one evening, the Gurukula, there wasn't a Gurukula, the Gurukula kids stayed in the wall, the rooms along the wall there. And there was one boy that was helping me, Subhadaloy. And we'd finished serving out food relief, and then I told him, go ahead, go. You can go now. I'll lock up. Get ready for evening arti. So I came along about 5 minutes later, and I see he's standing there on the wall and looking in the grass. And I started yelling at him, I told you to go, what are you doing? He said, snake. So the kids slept on the sidewalk there. And we both figured, you know, to have a snake right there in the evening at night when there's no lights, not a good idea. So we started rattling the grass. And it wasn't a very big snake, but it made a loud hiss like it was the size of a, you know, 10 feet long or something. So there were some bricks and stones, and we managed to eliminate the cobra. So I didn't know, wouldn't know what to do with it. So the evening arti had been going on, and I brought it to the side of the arti and called Japatakumar and I showed him the snake, and he said, take it outside the gate and burn it. So then I had to go back to the kitchen, get some kerosene, because you could only get kerosene under license. I was the only person that could. So then I had to take the snake out the front gate and burn it. So there are all kinds of interesting things. Japatakumar had decided that he would try to save Lakshmi by giving devotees bread. He had a recipe for a very sweet gour bread that was wonderful. He had a bread oven made. He purchased some pans. And the idea was that if you eat the bread and then drink the bale juice, then your stomach will swell up and you won't be able to eat anymore. The only problem is people figured that out, so they didn't drink the juice. But at 5 o'clock in the morning, we'd start right after Mangal Arati to make the dough, put it in the pans and everything. So I had an assistant there, his name was Kalipada. And it's interesting because he had a room right across from the kitchen. And I came one day after Mangal Arati, and he was usually in the kitchen already. So he wasn't there, and then I went to his room to see. And I smelled this smell that hippies know so well. And I knocked on his door, and he came, and his eyes were red. And I said, Prabhu, what are you doing? And he begged me, no, you can't tell Maharaj. Don't tell Maharaj. He says, you're cooking for the devotees. So I didn't know what to do, but I figured, you know, I have to tell Maharaj, which was a wrong decision, because they took him out of the kitchen and put him in the goshala. But 1 week later, he was back in the kitchen, and I was in the goshala. So somehow or other, Krishna didn't appreciate that. So then I was working in the goshala. I was sleeping in a hut there because the Muslims would come and they would try to steal the cows, steal the bull. There was a big bull named Dharma. And you'd have to clean the troughs. He had a big chain, so you'd have to kind of pull him away from the trough, chain him up to the other side, sweep the trough, and then put him back. So I figured, no, I'll just put some food on this side of the trough. He'll go over there, and I can clean the rest of the trough. But some or other, I didn't notice him coming back. And he, just with his head, he caught me in the side of the trough. And he just about cracked me in two. It's really amazing how strong. And then in the rainy season, you'd have to walk from the goshala. There was no road. Walk through the paddy fields, and the water was knee-deep, and you're walking in the dark, and all you can see is the lights of the lotus building. And you're chanting very sincerely because you're wondering if brother, sister of Cobra that you killed is going to come and take revenge. So, and then I got very ill, colitis, hepatitis, jaundice, and Javatakumara said I had the death look. So I had a return ticket to America, but they'd used that. Bhavananda Maharaj and Garga Muni had gone on a collecting party to America, so they'd use my ticket. So they could only give me a ticket to London. They could only give me a ticket to London. So I'd wanted to stay in India so I could associate with my spiritual master, but the whole time I was in Mayapur, Prabhupada was traveling in the West. So they sent me to Delhi to leave. The day I was supposed to leave was the day before Janmashtami, and Prabhupada was going to Vrindavan. So Brishinga, who's now Bhakti Nrisinga Maharaj in China, he was the treasurer there, and he gave me £1 and directions to Berry Place. And I told him, no, I'm not going. I'm going to Vrindavan to be with my spiritual master. And he told me, listen, Prabhupada's been trying for years to arrange for visas for his disciples. And if they catch you, and they'll catch you because you're white, if they catch you illegally in the country, then it'll affect Prabhupada's plans. So then I said, well, I have to go. So then the day before Janmashtami, instead of going to Vrindavan, I'm on the plane to London. And so then I I get to Victoria Station, and I find my way to Berry Place, and I'm thinking all along that I've been kicked out of the spiritual world. You know, I was in Mayapur, and now I'm in the West. But then when I walked into the temple room at Berry Place, and Radha Nandineshwar, they're right there. They're just this high above the ground, and almost you can touch them at the time. And Lord Jagannath is above, and you think, no, I think I'm still in the spiritual world. So it was very nice. Hare Krishna.
It's getting me back now.
Revenge. All right. Well, that was... I didn't know that you spent really like hardcore time in India. Yeah.
And I tried to go back. I was collecting to go back.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Then my skin turned yellow.
Yeah. I also left with because I turned yellow. Same thing. That's how I was.
Your urine is brown.
Yeah, I was yellow like a banana. Yeah.
They told me this devotee, Mahakarta, is...
Oh, Mahakarta.
He's in Sri Lanka, which I hadn't seen in 40 years. And he told me, just go. I said, I ain't got no money. I can't go to the hospital. Because in America, you got to pay.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that in England, it's, you know, medical.
Yeah, in England, it's free.
They said, just go there. They'll take one look at you, and they'll take you.
Well, as I was saying, those were days when pioneering days in a way, and when a lot of new development was there, and but it was also it wasn't so easy. But somehow or other, it all went on. Now it's the Hare Krishna movement is less focused. You know, now it's like everyone is connected on his own to the temples and is preoccupied with his own Krishna consciousness. But we're not all together on like one mission. Yeah, in those days, your authority would just tell you what to do, and that was it. Now you're sort of thinking, well, what service would fit my psychophysical nature? Now it's more like choosing yourself from the menu, and in a way, it's like nothing has changed, because there's still the same transcendental opportunity. There's still the same need to surrender. There's still the same reward that that you'd get then and that you're getting now. No one is missing out on anything. The only thing is now we need to be a little more self-motivated. That's the only difference. In this time, you have to do it yourself. No one's going to carry you all the way. No one's going to push you. I mean, in the old days, they would push you. If you weren't moving, they'd make you move. And as Madhavi Prabhu was moved from the kitchen to the Goshala, you could be moved from a country also, like... I was in Vrindavan, happily serving there for a long time and doing things like he was describing. Then they said, you're going to Detroit. I go, Detroit? Right? After Vrindavan, going to Detroit? Why go to Detroit? I said, yeah, you're going to Detroit. You're going to be the the treasurer. I think, oh, treasurer, bookkeeping in Detroit. Double nightmare, you know. I couldn't think of anything worse. Anyway, 3 hours later, I was going to Australia. Yeah? And that was just how it was. You're going to Australia. And there was nothing you could say. You were going to Australia. That's how it was. They were, now, you know, like, I mean, you try to get someone to go to Australia, you know, it's like, it's all negotiation, it's a whole thing. If you go to Australia, then you get 2 free trips to India, plus, you know, it's like, the times have changed a lot, and people are so much more independent, have again taken charge of their own life. But with that, you also have to take charge of your own spiritual life. Now you have to do it. Now you have to take advantage of the opportunity. And then the result is still the same. Still the same. Still all the mercy of Prabhupada is fully available. The mercy of Lord Chaitanya is fully available. And the opportunity to go back to Godhead this lifetime is still available in this movement. So in that way, it's a wonderful movement. And that way I'm trying to wrap up the evening. I want to keep on pushing this microphone back now because of tomorrow is another day and all that, and Mangal Arati and whatever everyone is having to do. I guess we go to the last part of the program. Is that part ready or... It is, eh? Well, that's encouraging. Let me thank you all very much for coming, and for Harish Prabhu for having us. No, very nice.